WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. President Bush has made it a priority in his second term to overhaul the Social Security system, which he says will soon be bankrupt. He's proposing a system in which workers under the age of 55 would have the option of placing up to a third of their Social Security taxes into personal accounts that would be invested in stocks and bonds. The remainder of the money would go into the system to help pay traditional benefit checks. This is a very controversial proposal. Today we'll hear from people on both sides of the issue. Later, we'll talk with economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, who is against the president's proposal. First, we hear from Michael Tanner. He's for it. He directs the project on Social Security choice at the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. This is the project that Andrew Biggs was affiliated with. Biggs is now the Associate Commissioner for Retirement Policy at the Social Security Administration and has been accompanying the president on some of his travels to promote the Social Security plan. My guest Michael Tanner has been with the Cato Institute since 1993. Why do you think Social Security needs to be changed?
Well, we have to understand that, first of all, Social Security is facing a serious financial problem. In less than 15 years, Social Security will begin to run a deficit. That is, it will begin to spend more money on benefits than it's taking in through taxes. Now, most people understand that when you have more money going out the door than you have coming in, that usually indicates a problem. Now, of course, here in Washington, we have the theory that says that you can then go back to the Social Security Trust Fund and draw on the assets in that trust fund until about 2042, after which Social Security would only be able to pay about 75 cents out of every dollar that's promised in benefits. But in reality, as groups from as disparate as the Clinton administration, the Congressional Budget Office, the Congressional Research Service, and the Social Security Administration itself have all made clear, the Social Security Trust Fund contains no real assets. It simply contains a promise against future tax revenues, or a promise that someday in the future the government will tax someone in order to continue to pay benefits. Overall, Social Security is facing unfunded liabilities of about $11.9 trillion, that's trillion with a T, dollars. On top of that, we have the opportunity to create a new and a better Social Security system, one that gives workers ownership and control over their money, something they don't have on the current under the current Social Security system.
Would you describe the basics of how President Bush's system would work?
Well, the president has proposed that beginning around 2009, workers would be able to, under age 55, would be able to take about a third of their payroll tax, about 4% of payroll, and would be able to save that in a private account. That money would be invested in real assets like annuity, stocks, bonds, and so forth, and that would supplement the traditional Social Security benefits that they get.
So that would be 4% out of a total of 12.5% that you could invest?
That's right. It would start capped at $1,000 so that people earning less than $25,000 a year would be able to invest the full 4%, and wealthier people would invest a smaller amount. But that cap would gradually be raised until everybody was investing about one-third of their payroll taxes. Now, I should also add that this is entirely voluntary. Workers would be free to remain in the current Social Security system if they wished. This would only be an option to invest.
Now, the way I understand it, it's not as if you, when you retire, you actually get a lump sum of all the money that you've invested. I think you use that money to buy an annuity. Could you explain how that would work?
Well, at retirement, you would have to buy an annuity equal to the poverty level. Any money in your account that you don't need to buy that annuity, anything over and above that level, you could take as a lump sum, or you could draw it down slowly over time, and if you died early, you'd be able to leave that to your heirs. In fact, one of the advantages of individual accounts is that they do create inheritable wealth, unlike the current Social Security system. But by having that guaranteed level of benefit, that floor annuity, we can ensure that no senior is going to end up below the poverty level.
Should we explain what an annuity is, or shall I say, should you explain what an annuity is?
An annuity is, under an annuity, you turn the principal of your account over to an insurance company, and in return, they provide you with a guaranteed income stream. So let's say you've accumulated $250,000 in your account. If you give them $100,000 of that, they then promise that they will make payments equal to the poverty level for as long as you live.
What happens to somebody who has invested in stocks that didn't do well and they end up losing money over time instead of gaining money? What happens to them?
Well, there are several safeguards built into the president's plan. First of all, the investment choices are going to be very limited to a few broadly diversified, very safe investment choices, similar to the Federal Thrift Savings Program that every federal worker is participating in. Second, the default option for these investments, if you make no decisions at all, if you don't understand anything about investments, don't want to worry about it, your money would go into what's called a life cycle fund. What this means is that when you're young, you would be invested more in stocks, and as you aged, they would gradually change over to bonds and other fixed income assets so that just before retirement, you're very much protected against the fluctuations of the market. And finally, we should realize that we're not talking about short-term investments where you have to worry whether the market goes up this year or down next year, or even for 3, 4, or 5 years. We're talking about people investing for 30 and 40 years. And unless the U.S. economy is going to do far worse in the future than we've ever seen it do in our history, we can expect the market to perform well over 30 and 40-year periods.
Now, critics of the plan say that, on the one hand, the personal accounts, the private investments, stand the chance of making you more money than you'd get through basic Social Security payments. On the other hand, they say you're doing this by taking a risk.
Well, no investment is risk-free, and the current Social Security system is not risk-free. Under the current Social Security system, your benefits are determined entirely politically. You have no legal right to benefits under the current system, and we know that the current system cannot pay the level of benefits that are promised, so there will inevitably be reductions in benefits. Market investment, on the other hand, when you have a long investment horizon and you have broadly diversified investments, is remarkably safe. But the ultimate answer is if you don't trust the markets, if you prefer the individual system, then you can remain in the current Social Security system. This is a voluntary aspect of this. This is a choice. You can choose private investment or you can choose to remain in the current system.
Now, the way I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the benefits under Social Security will be cut back over time. That the understanding is, since through these personal accounts you theoretically will be making more money, the government will be giving you less. So does that mean if you stay with basic Social Security as opposed to going into the personal accounts that your benefits will be less in the future than they would have been had the system not been reformed?
Under the traditional Social Security payments will likely be less than what has been promised. But that's what's going to happen anyway. Under current law, if we do nothing, Social Security benefits would ultimately have to be reduced by about 27%. That's simply because Social Security does not have enough money to pay those benefits.
If the plan is put into effect, what happens to the people who are on the cusp of the old plan and the new plan? In other words, people in their early 50s or up to age 54, and they'd no longer be on the old plan, but at the same time, there wouldn't be any time for them to save on the new plan?
Well, they're not likely to see much change in their traditional Social Security benefits. Any change in benefits that's being discussed would be phased in very slowly over time, would largely affect very young workers, people in their 30s or early 40s, for example. On the other hand, they would have the option of going into individual accounts. Someone in their 50s would still have 10, 15 years with which to invest and a chance to accumulate money. But that's not required. If they want to remain in the traditional system, they will always have that option.
What is the difference between how money is passed on and inherited in the current Social Security system and in the proposed Social Security system?
Under the current Social Security system, benefits are not inheritable. You have survivor's benefits, but they're only good for children that are under the age of 18. So if you have a single mother working two jobs, paying 12.5% of her income in Social Security taxes, and her children are 20 and 21, and she's 64, and she dies, none of the money that she's paid into the Social Security system can be passed on to her children. It's simply gone, lost. Under a system of individual accounts, however, that money would be part of her estate, and she could pass all of that money on to her kids that they could use to go to college or start a small business. It's one of the biggest advantages of moving to an individual account system.
But once you've used your Social Security money to buy an annuity, the principal of that annuity can't be passed on to your family.
Well, about one out of four workers will die before they reach retirement age, and the money would be fully inheritable for those workers. Second, you're only required to buy an annuity up to the poverty level.
Right. For workers who are on the lower end of the wage scale, they're probably not going to be getting anything higher than the poverty level. So what do they stand to gain here, or what do they stand to pass on, you know, as an inheritance?
Those lower wage workers are the most likely to die prior to retirement. So in those cases, again, they would have the chance to pass on the bulk of their savings to their heirs.
So you're counting on workers benefiting because they're going to die before they retire?
I don't know that I'm counting on them dying before they retire. I'm saying if they did, they would be better off than they are under the current system, and we know about one out of every four workers does.
Now, it will cost the government a lot of money to fund this program because younger people would theoretically be investing a lot of their money in private accounts and personal accounts, and yet older people would still need to be paid their Social Security benefits without being able to draw on the money that young people would have been putting in had this system not been reformed. So the government has to basically fund a lot of those benefits during a long transitional period. And the estimates I've read is that it would cost trillions of dollars. Since the government is already many trillions in debt, if we add more trillions for Social Security, are we taking a risk in terms of the financial security of our country?
Well, we're not adding any new debt to the system. What we're actually doing is taking debt that exists and is off the books, putting it on the books, and then moving it forward in time. So we're paying a little bit now, but we're saving money down the road. The people who have benefits growing in the individual accounts are people that the government will not have to pay traditional Social Security benefits when it comes time for their retirement. Government saves money on that end by spending a little money on the upfront end. In many ways, it's like the credit cards you just ran up over the holidays. You could, of course, just make the minimum benefit payment on them for the rest of your life, but it would be much more prudent if you paid them all off today, even if that meant that you had to dig a little bit deeper and find a little extra money with which to do that today. That, in essence, is what we're asking Congress to do. They are going to have to find some additional money, about $650 billion over the first 10 years of the Bush proposal, but that would save money in the long run.
But if I follow your thinking, by paying out now, we're going deeper into debt, and we're already very deep into debt as a nation, and we're paying more and more interest on that debt. So how does that help, and how do we know that we'll have the money to pay back that debt?
Well, the question is, how do we know we'll have the money to pay the benefits when they come due now, since we don't have that money? I would much rather be doing Social Security reform in an era of budget surpluses, but the fact that it's harder to do now doesn't make it any less necessary. We're running $450 billion budget deficits right now. But just to give you an example, in the year 2027, Social Security will have to redeem $200 billion worth of bonds in order to continue to pay the benefits that are promised. Well, where are they going to find that $200 billion if we're running $450 billion budget deficits? It doesn't get any easier if we wait.
My guest is Michael Tanner of the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. He'll be back after a break. In the second half of the show, we'll hear from New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, who opposes the president's Social Security plan. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the president's plan to overhaul the Social Security system. My guest, Michael Tanner, supports that plan. He directs the Cato Institute's project on Social Security choice. If the system is revised and you chose to go with having a personal account and putting some of your Social Security money into a personal account, which would basically mean the money would be invested, what would that process of investing be like?
It would very much resemble the current federal thrift savings program that every federal worker is participating in. Right now, your mailman or the GS2 secretary down the street are investing privately through the thrift savings program. These are funds that are administered by private money managers. And the Social Security Administration estimates that the cost of administering these accounts would be somewhere around 3/10 of 1% of the assets that are managed in these accounts. So it would be a very tiny administrative fee and really far lower than I think a lot of the critics of the accounts have been claiming.
You've written about how you think African Americans would really benefit from the proposed revisions to Social Security. How?
Well, we know that at every age and every income level, African Americans have a shorter life expectancy than do whites. And we also know that how much you get over a lifetime in Social Security benefits depends on how long you live. If you live to be 100, you get a lot of Social Security checks. Drop dead at 66, and it's not such a good deal. The fact is that if you take a black man and a white man, and they take the same job, go to work on the same day, get the same salary, retire on the same day, unfortunately, the white man will end up getting more in Social Security benefits than the black. We think that that's very unfair. We also know that about one out of every three black men pays into the Social Security system and then dies before they collect Social Security benefits. Jeffrey Liebman from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, a former Clinton administration official, estimates that over a lifetime, Social Security actually transfers about $21,000 from the average black man to the average white man. We think that's unfair and would be largely corrected through a system of individual accounts.
Have you looked at other countries that have tried plans that are similar to the one the president is proposing, such as England or Chile?
Yes. Some 20 nations, from Latin America to Eastern Europe to Hong Kong, have moved to a system of individual accounts, at least in some degree. Some countries have done quite well, Chile, for example. Other countries, such as Britain, have not designed their systems as well and have had more problems.
So you think the problem with the British system is that it wasn't designed as well? Do you think ours would be designed better? Is the Bush proposal better?
I think the British system was unique. It was built largely around an occupational pension scheme that doesn't exist in the United States. It was absurdly complicated in a way that left it difficult to understand for many workers, and that ultimately opened the door to a certain amount of fraud and abuse that took place there. And it ran very high administrative fees, largely because the British capital markets were not particularly sophisticated when this system was brought in, as well as the complexity. So I don't think it has a great deal of relevance to the U.S. System.
Stephen Moore, who is the founder of the Club for Growth, which helps fund conservative candidates, and is a libertarian himself, has described Social Security as the soft underbelly of the welfare state. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that Social Security is the largest connection that most people have with the government. And in many ways, it does undermine the American system of self-reliance. For example, you know, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are going to get Social Security checks. There's something to me somehow obscene about people who are billionaires collecting money from the government. Do they really need a $2,000 check every month from the federal government? I think what we really need to do is, if we want to have a welfare system that protects seniors against ever falling into poverty in their old age, we should have one, and we should fund it from general revenues and make a determination as a society that that's what we want to do. But we really don't need a system that pulls every American into a government-run retirement program and makes us all ultimately dependent on politicians.
What's your reaction to leaders of the Christian right who have said that they won't back the president's Social Security plan unless he commits to making a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage a priority?
Well, I would hope that we can get Social Security reform through without the aid of bigots.
So you disagree with them on that as a priority, and you don't think it should be connected with Social Security?
I don't see where there's any connection whatsoever between making a new and better Social Security system and denying some Americans their rights.
Who do you think will be the winners and losers if the president's system is put into effect? And I realize you might say there won't be any losers, but I thought I'd ask.
Well, I think the big winners will be middle and low income workers, because today they don't get a chance to get in on savings and investment. You know, we're a country in which about half of Americans have some form of investment savings for their retirement. They have 401ks and they have IRAs. But if you're a low-income worker, after you pay your food, your rent, your medical care, you don't really have an opportunity to get in on this type of investment and build real wealth, to build a nest egg that's inheritable for your children and grandchildren. You don't get that chance. Under the president's plan, for the first time in their lives, many of these people would have that chance to have real wealth. So I think they're the biggest winners out of this. The losers are going to be the politicians in Washington, because they're no longer going to have as much control over people's lives. They're not going to have this little pot of money that they can dip into to help hide their spending. And they're not going to be able to reward people at election time by saying they're raising Social Security benefits or that they're saving Social Security yet again. So I think they're the big losers.
Michael Tanner, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Michael Tanner directs the Cato Institute's Project on Social Security Choice.